Prime Ministers want to cut either taxes or public expenditure.
Thank you.
That's what Hacker wants, too.
Politicians are like children. You can't just give them what they want. It only encourages them.
Right.
But let's be clear about this, Humphrey.
Mm-hmm.
The entire system hinges on you as Cabinet Secretary controlling the PM, and on me as Permanent Secretary of the Treasury controlling the Chancellor. Right?
Right.
And on both of us keeping an agreeable tension between them. Mistrust. Hostility.
Yes, mind you, I think they've managed that all right even without us. The Chancellor will never forgive the Prime Minister for beating him to number 10. And the Prime Minister will never trust the Chancellor. After all, one never trusts anyone that one has deceived.
Perhaps not. Tax cuts unite them. They get them both votes.
Yes, but surely, Frank, this tax cut is contingent upon the Prime Minister's fantasy about cancelling Trident and switching to conventional forces.
Nevertheless, he's giving away £1.5 billion of our money. It's unthinkable, even if they are only proposals. I had the devil of a job getting the Chancellor to oppose it.
How'd you do it?
Oh, I used the one about our needing the money for hospitals and schools and the old people. Wicked machine gambit, basically.
Yes, the caring Chancellor.
Yes, that one.
Yes, usually works. But, Frank, would a tax cut matter all that much? After all, it's only £1.5 billion.
Oh, I agree. It's not much in itself. My worry is about your letting it get through so soon.
Well, if I were in your shoes at the Treasury, I'd be much more worried about the state of the economy, low productivity.
Well, that's not our fault. It's the British worker, fundamentally lazy, wants something for nothing. The figures for absenteeism are going up and up. Nobody wants to do an honest day's work anymore.
Shocking. Anyway, I'm fresh.
Oh. Busy afternoon?
Oh, yes, indeed. I gather England is 7-3.
Easy, Daddy Joe.
Fentimore, where that came from. Cheers.
Yeah.
To the civil service.
To the British Tobacco Group and to its chair.
Thank you.
Ah, I do love a good afternoon's cricket.
You know, you chaps at BTG are national benefactors, really.
We like to think so.
You know, Joe, actually, I've got a small favour to ask. On behalf of the Royal Opera House. Now, as you know, Covent Garden's more or less run from the Cabinet Office, but I'm told that one or more productions are likely to be threatened next year, lack of funds.
You know, I've got the Minister for Sport coming along this afternoon, and I know he wants to twist my arm on behalf of Wimbledon or Grand's Hatch or something or other.
Yeah.
Covent Garden.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
I don't know where we'd all be without you. Tell me, have you ever invited Peter Thorne?
The Minister of State for Health.
Yes, I thought you always included them.
This one won't come. He's been got at by the anti-smoking lobby.
Oh,
especially. I don't think he's got much clout in Whitehall, though, has he?
None at all. He's just a minister. Good shot. Is he out?
This paper says that if we cancel Trident and bring in conscription, we shall have £1.5 billion available for tax cuts. And what do I find?
What do you find, Prime Minister?
I find that the Chancellor of all people opposes me on this. A wonderful chance to be popular with the voters, and he says no. Doesn't that surprise you?
No.
It doesn't surprise me. Why doesn't it surprise you?
Because he's advised by the Treasury, and the Treasury don't believe in giving money back.
It's not theirs. It's the taxpayers.
That is one view. It's not the view the Treasury takes. Not once they've got their hands on it.
But if they don't need it.
Sorry?
If they don't need it. Taxation isn't about what you need.
Well, what is it about? Prime Minister, the Treasury doesn't work out what they need to spend and then think how to raise the money.
What does it do?
They pitch for as much as they think they can get away with and then do what they think. If you start giving money back because you don't need it, you're breaking with centuries of tradition. What would happen to the British Navy, for example?
We'd still be there. We still need a navy.
We have only 4 capital ships, so we'd need only 4 admirals and 1 admiral of the fleet.
How many admirals have we got?
60. Treasury is the most powerful department because it controls all the money. If you take away its money, you take away some of its power. So naturally they resist.
So how do we get the Treasury to agree to these tax cuts?
By getting the Chancellor to agree.
Well,
How do we get the Chancellor to agree?
By getting the Treasury to agree.
Humphrey, this is impossible.
Yes, you're quite right, Prime Minister, it is impossible.
There must be some way of forcing the Treasury's hand.
Yes, indeed.
How?
By forcing the Chancellor's hand.
How do I force the Chancellor's hand?
By forcing the Treasury's hand.
Humphrey!
Prime Minister, can't you persuade the Chancellor? He's your Cabinet colleague, after all.
That's the point. I need help from somebody who's on my side.
The Minister of State of the DHSS is here.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Humphrey.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
Dr. Thorne, Prime Minister.
Peter, come in. Sit down. Now, you wanted to talk to me about...
cigarettes.
Ah, yes.
You read my paper.
Yes, absolutely.
How did you react?
Well, I wonder if you could summarize it in your own words.
Those were my own words.
Yes, exactly, of course. But the
Prime Minister often finds that a brief verbatim summary clarifies the emphasis and focuses on salient points.
Salient points, precisely.
Well, briefly, I'm proposing that the government should take action to eliminate smoking. Complete ban on all cigarette sponsorship and advertising, even at the point of sale. £50 million to be spent on anti-smoking publicity. Ban smoking in all public places, and progressive deterrent tax rises over the next 5 years until a package of 20 costs about the same as a bottle of whiskey.
Isn't that rather drastic?
Absolutely. It should reduce smoking by at least 80%, 90% if we're lucky, and drive the tobacco companies out of business.
Yes. Well, Peter, of course, you know I agree with you. Basically, smoking should be stopped. Oh, no question. And we will stop it in due course, at the appropriate juncture, in the fullness of time.
You mean forget it?
No, absolutely. But we must be realists. You and I weren't born yesterday.
No, and we didn't die yesterday.
What?
300 people did, prematurely, as a result of smoking. 100,000 deaths a year, at least.
It's appalling, but you know what would happen if I took this to Cabinet? You know what the Treasury would say?
Yes, they say that smoking brings in £4 billion a year in revenue and we can't manage without it.
You can't beat the Treasury?
No, not with financial arguments. But this is a moral argument.
Yes, but even... Wait a minute. I've got an idea. This could be a way to beat the Treasury.
You mean you'll support me?
You've made your point. We'll give it a try. I'll even read your report. Again. This could be very interesting. Thank you very much indeed.
But will you support me?
Not publicly. It would undermine my position, undermine the argument, if I were to support you from the start. I have to be seen as the impartial judge who is swayed by the force of the argument.
Yes, I see that.
But off the record, I'd like to see this pushed very hard. Very hard indeed. I'd like to see you make some speeches on it. Peter, thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your cigarette paper. Your paper on that.
Is this serious, Prime Minister?
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's always been the practice in the past to discourage anti-smoking speeches by ministers and not to print or distribute their speeches if they make them.
Well, I want Peter's speeches printed and distributed. I want everybody to know.
Yes, Prime Minister. Do you think you will win this one? The tobacco lobby is incredibly powerful.
Well, some you win, some you lose, Bernard. This one I shall definitely lose.
And why?
If you were the Treasury, which would you rather do without? £1.5 billion in tax cuts or £4 billion in lost tobacco tax revenue?
Well, the tax cuts is smaller.
Exactly. That's what I want. And that's what I shall get.
Oh, it's Sir Humphrey. Can he have a word?
Yes, of course.
Yes, come in, please.
Prime Minister.
Humphrey.
I was just wondering, did you have an interesting chat with Dr. Thorne?
Yes. He proposed the elimination of smoking.
By a campaign of mass hypnosis, perhaps.
By raising tobacco taxes sky high and simultaneously banning all advertising, including a point of sale. Don't you think his position is admirably moral?
Moral, perhaps, but extremely silly. No man in his right mind could possibly contemplate such a proposal.
I'm contemplating it.
Yes, of course, Prime Minister. Please, don't misunderstand me. It is quite right, of course, that you should contemplate all proposals that come from your government, but no sane man would ever support it.
I'm supporting it.
And quite right. You see, the only little problem is that the tax on tobacco is a major source of revenue for the government.
It's also a major source of death from killer diseases.
Yes, indeed. But no definite causative link has ever been proved, has
the
it?
Statistics are an argument.
Statistics, you can prove anything with statistics.
Even the truth. Here, smoking-related diseases cost the NHS £165 million a year.
Yes, but we've been into that. It has been shown that if those extra 100,000 people had lived to a ripe old age, they would have cost us even more in pensions and social security than they did in medical treatment. So, financially speaking, it's unquestionably better that they continue to die at about the present rate.
When cholera killed 30,000 people in 1833, we got the Public Health Act. When smog killed 2,500 people in 1952, we got the Clean Air Act. A commercial drug kills half a dozen people and we get it withdrawn from sale.
Cigarettes kill 100,000 people a year. And what do we get?
£4 billion a year. 25,000 jobs in the tobacco industry, a flourishing cigarette export business helping our balance of trade, 250,000 jobs related to tobacco, newsagents, packaging, transport.
These figures are just guesses.
No, they're government they're facts.
I see, so your statistics are facts, and my facts are merely statistics.
Prime Minister, I'm on your side. I'm merely giving you some of the arguments that you will encounter.
Thank you, Humphrey. I'm so glad to know that we shall have support such as yours.
But, Prime Minister, it will be pointed out that the tobacco companies are great sponsors of sport. Now, where would the BBC sports programmes be if cigarette companies couldn't sponsor the events that they do?
Humphrey, we're talking about 100,000 deaths a year.
Yes, but cigarette taxes pay for a third of the cost of the National Health Service. We're saving many more lives than we otherwise could because of those smokers who voluntarily lay down their lives for their friends. Smokers are national benefactors.
So long as they live.
Not that any definite causal link has ever been proved, as I said before.
It's time for your next cabinet committee, Prime Minister. Then you're lunching at the House, where the Minister for Sport wants an urgent word.
What about
sponsorship?
Who tipped him off? He's one of the tobacco lobby.
A member of your government?
Yes, of course. He's Minister for Sport. He has a vested interest. He's also one of the MPs for Nottingham. Did you tell him? How did he know?
The grapevine, perhaps. Prime Minister?
Tell the Minister I'll see him at the House at 2:30 for 10 minutes.
With pleasure, Prime Minister.
Well, not with pleasure, Bernard, but I'll see him anyway.
Minister for Sport is here, Prime Minister.
Oh, Leslie, my dear fellow.
Would you like me to smoke? Prime Minister. It's about the rumour that you intend to make a personal attack on the tobacco industry.
I haven't heard that rumour.
You mean it's not true?
Well, the Minister for Health is considering the matter, but no decision has been taken yet.
Well, there's no smoke without fire.
Needless to say, you'd be consulted. As Minister for Sport, you have an interest in the matter.
But never mind sport. There are marginal seats in Bristol, Nottingham, Glasgow, Basildon, and Northern Ireland, all with tobacco workers. I've got 4,000 tobacco workers in my constituency. Now, what about my seat?
Lungs.
My lungs are fine.
Well, he doesn't breathe through his seat. I see, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Bernard. Now, I can see the difficulty, but if something is right for the country, surely you agree that the government is right to pursue it, regardless.
Well, of course, the government must do what's right, but not if it affects marginal constituencies. There's obviously a limit.
Well, as I say, no decision has been taken yet.
For the good of the party, you can't do this.
Weren't you a paid consultant to the British Tobacco Group?
Well, of course, the fact that they BTG did pay me a small retainer. It's totally beside the point. They're a very generous corporation and with a strong sense of responsibility towards the community. Look at all the money they give to sports. Now you're trying to stop them.
They just do it to sell more cigarettes.
No, they do it out of a sense of service to the community.
Oh, well, that's all right, then. They can go on giving the money anonymously if they like.
Well, I'm sure they'd be happy to. Provided they could publicise the fact that they were doing it. Now, tell me, is it true that Peter Thorne is also trying to change the government health warning?
Is it? Well, I believe Dr. Thorne is proposing something like dying of lung cancer can seriously damage your health.
It is not true.
Leslie, if we do nothing in the next 10 years, in this country alone, we're going to have 1 million premature deaths.
Yes, but evenly spread. Not just in marginal constituents. Listen, Jim, there is no conclusive proof of any causal link between smoke.
We at the DHSS are profoundly worried about smoking.
And obviously we agree it's our duty to help the Prime Minister achieve his objective, but with a third of the voters as smokers, I can't raise taxes too high. Mm. One, the Chancellor won't commit electoral suicide. And two, the inflationary effect would be considerable.
But it must be admitted there is a moral principle involved.
Moral principle, no question.
Well, we fully understand and applaud the PM's concern. In fact, we do most earnestly believe in the moral principle.
But where £4 billion of revenue is at stake, I think we should have to consider very carefully whether we have the right to indulge ourselves in the rather selfish luxury of pursuing moral principles.
And where would the arts be without tobacco sponsorship? They'd be at the mercy of the Arts Council.
Yes, exactly. And all those silly pressure groups and fanatics like the Royal College of Physicians.
Fanatics.
I mean, they want the government to have a policy on the matter.
It would be different if the government were a team, but in fact they're a loose confederation of warring tribes.
You know, if only the PM could meet some of the tobacco people, then he could see what really nice chaps they were.
And genuinely concerned about the health risks.
Oh. I mean, there can't be anything really wrong with them. BTG have got an ex-permanent secretary on their board.
And could well have more.
In the fullness of time.
I think we ought to raise some questions about your minister, you know, Ian. I mean, what's he know about the subject? Peter Thorne, he's only a doctor. I mean, his sole purpose is keeping people alive.
Must be biased.
Yes. Seeing your patients die must emotionally distort your judgment. Very understandable. But a great handicap to cool decision-taking.
Right. Very true, but can we find something a bit stronger?
Well, Brad, you know, I think the crucial argument is that we're living in a free country and we must be free to make our own decisions. After all, government shouldn't be a nursemaid. We don't want the nanny state.
Oh, that's very
excellent.
The only problem is that that is also the argument for legalising the sale of marijuana, heroin, cocaine, arsenic and gelatin.
Well, maybe that's a good idea if we can put a big enough tax on them.
Politically difficult?
Pity.
Yes. Got it. When the Prime Minister was Minister for Administrative Affairs, I used to get him to accompany me on regular visits to Lords Wimbledon and Glyndebourne as a guest of BTG. So he's thoroughly implicated in receiving hospitality worth hundreds, possibly thousands from them. Now, if that were to leak, shocking though a leak would be...
Oh, shocking. Shocking.
It would be profoundly embarrassing for the Prime Minister. I can't think why I didn't think of it before.
Nor can I.
Well, Bernard. Well, Prime Minister. Very well, Bernard. Things are going very well indeed.
Oh, good.
I've got the Treasury on the run and the Chancellor.
Oh, is that good? When he's a member of your own government?
Of course it's good. You've got to learn to come to heel. You've got to learn to cooperate.
What do you mean, cooperate?
I mean obey my commands. That's what cooperate means when you're Prime Minister.
Prime Minister, why are these tax cuts in your interest? I know the Treasury hates giving money back, but it's your government too.
But it's simple. Cutting taxes by £1.5 billion is going to win us masses of votes.
But my ministers are more interested in getting money for their own departments than in supporting me. So I'm using my support for Peter Thorne as a little leverage on the Treasury.
Your loyal support.
Precisely. In order to get their loyal support.
And after you get the tax cut, you will withdraw your loyal support from Peter Thorne.
Dear, dear Bernard, how can you be so cynical? I shall simply rearrange my priorities.
Sir Humphrey's waiting to see you outside.
Send him in at once.
Yes, Prime Minister. Your word is my cooperation.
Humphrey.
Prime Minister.
Everything all right?
Everything, I'm afraid, Prime Minister, is very far from all right.
Yeah, what's the trouble?
Your anti-smoking legislation.
What about it?
Well, notwithstanding the fact that your proposal could conceivably encompass certain concomitant benefits of a marginal peripheral relevance, there is a countervailing consideration of infinitely superior magnitude involving your personal complicity and corroborative malfeasance, with the consequence that the taint and stigma of your former associations and diversions could irredeemably and irretrievably invalidate your position and culminate in public revelations and recriminations of a profoundly embarrassing and ultimately indefensible character.
Perhaps I could have a précis of that.
There's nicotine on your hands.
Me?
All the hospitality that we've enjoyed at BTG's expense. Champagne receptions, buffet lunches, the best seats at sporting and cultural events.
What's the problem?
The tobacco companies may release this embarrassing information to the press.
It's not embarrassing. I've had drinks at the Soviet embassy. That doesn't make me a Russian spy.
No.
Let them do their worst. Anything else?
Prime Minister, there is another vital point to bear in mind. A lot of people, eminent people, influential people, have argued that such legislation would be a blow against freedom of choice.
Rubbish. I'm not banning smoking itself. Does every tax rise represent a blow against freedom?
Well, it depends how big the tax rise is.
That's fascinating. Does 20 pence represent a blow against freedom?
Prime Minister...
25 pence? Mm-hmm. 30 pence? 31. Is something a blow against freedom simply because it can seriously damage your wealth?
Prime Minister, I must warn you of the difficulties. I foresee all sorts of unforeseen problems.
Such as?
If I could foresee them, they wouldn't be unforeseen.
You just said you could, Fossey.
If we could set up an interdepartmental committee, a parliamentary inquiry, a royal commission, perhaps a treasury committee in the first instance.
Don't talk to me about the treasury.
Why not?
The treasury are blocking my plans for a £1.5 billion tax cut. If only they could be more flexible.
I don't think they're fully committed on that other matter yet.
Really?
Absolutely not. Oh, no, flexible. I'm sure they could find a way.
Could they?
Well, the only stumbling block would be that if your anti-smoking proposals were to go through, they'd be too busy with those to find a way to help with the other cuts, you see.
Well, of course, my anti-smoking proposals, important though they are, don't have nearly such a high priority as defence.
Ah.
For health is here, Prime Minister.
Prime Minister, if I might have 1 or 2 minutes to make some phone calls.
Thank you very much. Show him in there.
Dr. Thorne.
Peter, what can I do for you?
I've just had some very exciting news. We've got full backing from the BNA, the Royal College of Physicians, and 8 other top scientific and medical colleges.
Marvellous. And of course, your legislation can't be put through immediately.
Oh, yes, of course. Henry requires it to be announced as government policy within 3 months and a white paper in a year. That's bags of time.
Yes. Well, since we spoke, I've encountered a few problems. The Treasury, you know.
But it can't be anything you didn't know about already.
Oh, yes. Peter, it's not as simple as you think.
Look, Jim, I really am serious about this. It's the one really important and worthwhile thing I believe I can do in politics. If you stall it, I'll have to resign. And say why.
Oh, excuse me, Prime Minister. Could Sir Humphrey see you urgently just for a moment?
Would you mind waiting outside for a moment, Peter?
Yes.
Prime
quite all right. The Treasury have looked at your proposal again and they find that they can encompass your tax cut after all, on the understanding that no work is needed on the anti-smoking proposal.
That's fine, Humphrey, but there is another complication.
Yes?
Peter Thorne says he's going to resign if I drop it. Go to the press and have me condemned by all the doctors and scientists in Britain.
Oh. Help! You still have that government vacancy in the Treasury, don't you?
You mean... It's a very big promotion. A very rapid one.
Nevertheless, for a very able minister.
Get Peter back in here. And then get on to the Department of the Environment. If Leslie Potts is still there, get him over here at once.
Yes, Prime Minister. Prime Minister, I think I'll just...
Excuse me. Dr. Thorne.
Ah... Peter, I've just remembered we still have that vacancy at the Treasury. I've been racking my brains how to fill it. But your work on this paper, I have to tell you, has impressed me enormously.
You're not trying to get rid of me?
Definitely not. Quite the reverse.
Well, it's a terrific step up.
But merited. Thoroughly merited.
But I don't see how I can take it if it means dropping the anti-smoking bill.
Peter, sit down. Let me be absolutely honest with you. This legislation would have been, will be, very difficult to get through. The Treasury is the key. That's the real stumbling block, not the Department of Health. Now, it'd take a bit longer, but if you were inside, learning the ropes, we'd have a much better chance of a really watertight, foolproof act when it did get to the statute books. Believe me.
So my proposals aren't dropped?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I'll take the Treasury job.
Good.
Thanks a lot.
That leaves us with a vacancy at the Department of Health.
Minister for Sport is here. Oh. Mr. Fox.
Hi, dear Jack.
Sit down.
Now, how would you like to be Minister of Health?
Me? It's a considerable promotion.
But merited. Thoroughly merited. You're very suitable for the job. You're not one of the medical lobby, you know, like Dr. Peter Thorne.
Well, of course, I can't refuse it. Thank you, Prime Minister.
Humphrey, meet our new Minister for Health.
Congratulations.
I don't want the job if it means attacking the tobacco industry.
Ah, but it wouldn't. You see, Leslie, we in government have to be realists. I want you to work with the tobacco industry. I mean, they're really trying to sort out the problems. They've got huge resources. Nice chaps. Caring people and really fabulous employers. They're really trying to help. I want you to work with the industry, not against it. All right? What did he say?
I think he said yes, Prime Minister.
Thank you.